Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am delighted to speak with you today and sit together with you today. We'll sit at the end of this short talk for 10 minutes, and I'll be delighted to guide us in that practice. So in the meantime, please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair with your feet flat on the floor. And today we come to the seventh quality of the dharmic person. We have been discussing the seven qualities of the dharmic person, and today we're going to talk about the last one, the seventh. These qualities, by the way, are things that arise from our practice. In other words, they are not things that you have to crank up or cultivate or go out and get or make a great plan for, although you're welcome to do all those things. Rather, they seem to arise spontaneously as our meditation practice takes root. So rather than trying to make these things happen, you could notice when they are happening. So just a very quick recap, the seven qualities of the dharmic person. The first was called passionlessness, which means taking everything as it comes, as it were. Doesn't mean good things feel bad or bad things feel good. It just means that you're ready to meet what comes your way without being overly fearful of what might happen or desirous of what you hope will happen. Although, of course, all those things are very human. The second quality was called contentment, which means instead of always trying to get something else or get somewhere or be someone else, you find a way to appreciate what you have. Crazy that one could do that, but one could. The third quality of the dharmic person is called fewer activities, which means you sort of become less interested in things that are not really that important. And you're more content to be still, to focus more deeply on what actually interests you instead of trying to find more things or add more accomplishments or go more places or do more things. Nothing wrong with those things. But at a certain point in our practice, we discover that there is great benefit in quiet and silence. The fourth quality was called good conduct, which doesn't mean being a goody-goody. It means rather actually just paying attention to what's going on within you and around you. That is what is called good conduct in this view. The fifth quality of the dharmic person is called awareness of the teacher, which means really noticing that there are teachers, teachings, opportunities to learn from people who possess wisdom greater than our own. And to be able to appreciate such people is part of what is meant by awareness of the teacher. There are great wisdom masters out there. They are worthy of respect. And whether we can meet them in person or not, or hear them talk in real time or not, we can study their works. Maybe they're long gone, but we can still appreciate the vast wisdom that they embodied. So awareness of the teacher, or the teachings, I would add. The sixth quality of the dharmic person is called propagating prajna. Prajna means wisdom. And here, this has something to do with intellect, but not necessarily knowledge or academics or scholarly pursuits. Nothing wrong with those things, I'll say again. But it means, propagating prajna means checking things out. What is your mind made of? Where do your thoughts come from? Where do they go? Investigating experience is a way to propagate wisdom or prajna. And today, the seventh quality of the seven qualities of the dharmic person, an attitude of goodness. Now, in the Tibetan tradition that I have studied in, these many years, now maybe even going on 30, the word goodness is used a lot. And basic goodness, basically good, propagating goodness, attitude of goodness, so on and so forth. And that can be confusing to those of us who we're brought up to think that there's that good means you're a goody-goody, or you're always do the right thing, or you never get upset. Otherwise, you're bad. So this version of good or goodness is not necessarily the kind of goodness that is the opposite of bad or badness. I know that's opaque sounding. But it means something more like this version of goodness includes things that are good, and it includes things that are bad because of the way we approach them with our mind. When we can approach the experiences of our life within us and around us and so forth with a sense of curiosity and sharpness and fearlessness, even when those things are not good, we are still holding an attitude of goodness by being open and awake. So, attitude of goodness doesn't mean, okay, I have discovered how to be open and awake, and now I'm just going to stick and stay. I'm going to freeze in this state of, I don't know what some Buddhist lady told me was an attitude of goodness. Ixnay. Because your ability to be curious and interested and awake and fearless and sharp is always changing. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. Often we forget. That's okay. The attitude of goodness is still possible by your intention to ride the experience that is true for you right now. That's one way to look at attitude of goodness. Again, this all comes from our meditation practice, which we're going to do shortly, where we sit with what is, our good thoughts, our cranky thoughts, our vicious thoughts, our beautiful thoughts, our important thoughts and silly thoughts and so on. We sit with all of that while remaining, to the best of our ability, focused on feeling the breath. And all of these thoughts just swirl, collide, come and go, but we stay. We stay with the technique. We stay with the intention to be present. And that is a good way of describing attitude of goodness, I would say. Propagating prajna and attitude of goodness, both for me, have something to do with the intention or the commitment to continually deepen my practice, my understanding, my humanity, whatever it might be. I'm sure you share that intention, otherwise we wouldn't be talking right now. So I feel inspired to share with you a little formula, a little Buddhist formula for how to do that. How do you continue to deepen your prajna, your wisdom, your attitude of goodness, your connection to the qualities of the dharmic person, your recognition of your own unique and powerful path? How do you do that? So there are three steps, and they are called hearing, contemplating, and meditating. And as we close out this series on the seven qualities of the dharmic person, I think this is a great thing to leave you with, although we will be starting a new series in a few weeks, so don't go anywhere. But this is a great way to close out this series, because this is how learning happens. This is how wisdom is acquired. This is how recognition of the dharmic qualities blossoms. It's a big lead up, I know. I think it's merited. So the first, hearing, that's what you're doing right now, presumably. You're listening to me, in this case, say things. That's the first step. And hearing is not so simple. It's not like you're like, yeah, I got what you said. I made some notes. Hearing means actually you listened. You took it in. You took it in without immediately connecting your opinions to it. That's not so easy to do. But that's what is meant by hearing. It's very simple. It's very raw. Your opinions and ideas and judgments, very important, but not included in hearing, because then you're just listening to yourself, which is, again, important. But this hearing is more simple than that. You just take the words in, whether you're hearing them or reading them or thinking them, you stop thinking your thoughts and you start thinking mine. That is the definition of listening that a wonderful writer gave, Catherine McCoon. And I think it's brilliant. And that's what is meant by hearing or listening, is you stop thinking your thoughts about what I'm saying and you just hear what I'm saying. In this case, happens to be me talking, but whoever you're listening to or whomever. That's step one. Without that one, the other two don't really matter, because you may contemplate, you may meditate, but what you've heard is yourself. So we want to hear something in addition to our own thoughts, because we already got our own thoughts. So what else can we get? What else you got? So hearing, step one. Second step is called contemplating, which doesn't just mean thinking about, although that is very important. And now, please bring your judgments, your opinions, your critiques, your ideas. Bring them all in. But contemplating, in addition to, well, what do I think about that, means checking what you have heard against your experience. Is it true? Maybe I sit there and think about it and make a list of, oh yeah, I think it's true because of these reasons, or it might not be true because of those reasons. That's fine. But when you go into your life and you hold what you've heard against your experience, does it hold? Does it persist? Does it make sense? Does it help? So contemplating, again, is not just thinking about, it's measuring in your own life the validity or lack thereof of what you've heard. That's step number two, contemplating. Third, meditating does not just mean our practice that we're fixing to do momentarily. Here, meditating means something very different. I'm not sure even why the word meditating is used. But first you hear, like, Then you contemplate. Let me check that. And then what you have discovered for yourself is true. You do it. You actually do it. You don't leave it on the table. You don't leave it in the journal. You don't close the book and put it away. You actually bring it into your experience and enact it, apply it, do it. Then between these three steps, hearing, contemplating, meditating, or bringing into experience, now the wisdom is yours. You have completed the circuit of making it so. So I urge you to think about this. Usually we think learning is hearing. Oh, I heard it, I wrote it down, I could repeat it back. I guess I learned it. This view says, not so fast. That's just step one. The next step is bring your own intelligence to bear. Is it true? This is the very, very important step. And then what you find is true, then you do it. It doesn't remain academic. It becomes part of who you are and how you act and what you bring to your world. So I truly hope this is useful. It has been a delight to talk about the seven qualities of the Dharmic person with you. I'm very excited for our next series, which will start in 2 weeks. I don't know what it is yet because I'm still thinking about it. But if you have any thoughts or wishes or requests, please don't hesitate to let me know in comments. It would be really helpful. And I would also really appreciate it. And in the meantime, let's practice. Please begin your practice by forgetting everything I just said, or just putting it aside in any case, and establish your posture. You're already seated, presumably. Legs are crossed or feet are flat on the floor if you're in a chair or on a couch. And sit up straight. Nothing to hide. Sitting up straight encourages you to remember your innate grace and dignity, which is indestructible. Both are indestructible. Let yourself feel heavy and rooted from the waist down. held in place firmly like a mountain, immovable, unshakable, strong. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. They're just resting. Thank you very much. You're very busy all day. You can just rest now. And let yourself feel light and spacious and joyful even from the waist up, like you're lifting up to the sky. So you're at once rooted and uplifted. Let the belly soften and relax. Let the shoulders relax. I always forget that one. There's nothing to hold up or drag right now, so you can really let them just settle. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long and the mouth is closed because you don't have to talk. And the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. The breath is natural, in and out through the nose, meaning there's no instructions for breathing because you're already pretty much an expert at it. So just keep doing that, please. In our practice, the eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front, and the eyes are very soft. And rather than trying to latch onto anything, they simply receive what's in the visual field. Now let your attention rest on the breath, which means feel the breath, feel the body breathe, which is different than observe or notice, which implies a kind of stepping away and looking back at yourself. This is a real being with, merging with, feeling the inhale and the exhale. Your mind will continue to make thoughts. That's totally fine. No problem. No need to stop that. Please don't even think about that with your thoughts. Just let them be as they are. Most of them will come and go on their own. You don't have to do anything about them. Only if you notice that you've become so absorbed in a line of thought, like so absorbed, that you're no longer aware of your breath at all. That's helpful because you're not meditating anymore. So now you can come back. So notice that you're thinking first. Label that moment thinking. Let go. Just let go. Come back to this breath and begin again. You're invited to start over. You can start over as many times as you like. So we'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Be well.